For much of the 20th century, blacks in the South were barred from the voting booth, sent to the back of the bus, and denied many of the rights enjoyed by other American citizens. It was called Jim Crow, named for a minstrel character that became shorthand for a system of segregation. A new book from historians at Duke University captures the recollections of the last generation of men and women to grow up under Jim Crow. Producer Stephen Smith of American Radio Works used many of the oral histories, plus interviews with scholars, to show what life was like for blacks behind the veil of segregation.
Okay, my name is Charles Grattan. I was born July 16th, 1932, Birmingham, Alabama. I can remember my mother would have the occasion to send me to this grocery store that was approximately a mile away. She would give me instructions before I leave home and tell me, say, son, now, you pass any white people on your way, say, you get off the sidewalk, give them the sidewalk, you know. You move over, don't challenge white people.
Well, my grandmother always told me, says, you have a certain place and stay in it. That was automatic. You didn't have to think about it. You knew it and you were taught it.
You couldn't go to eat in a restaurant. Or if they served you at all, you went around to a window at the back of the place, right at the kitchen, you see.
My name is Glenda Elizabeth Gilmore. I'm a professor of history at Yale University. Jim Crow was a word that white and black Southerners used for an elaborate system of white supremacy, a system that was established both through legislation in the courts and through custom. It could mean anything from being unable to vote to being segregated to being lynched.
It meant the ugly signs that you saw. You saw them at the railroad stations, you saw them at the bus stations. It said, Negroes to the rear, and it meant that room that was for white was always bigger, always had more seats, and was always better kept.
They didn't have no laws like that against dogs. A dog could stick his head in anywhere, but places I could not go.
My name is Thomas Christopher Columbus Chapman, Sr. I was born in Coffee County, Georgia. When we had gathered our crops and sold all the money crops like tobacco, peanuts, and cotton, and my father told me that Saturday, I said, well, boy, let's go up and settle up. So we went up to Mr. Thomas' house and went in the backyard as usual. He came out on the porch and he started thumbing through his book. And finally he looked up at my father and said, John, you don't have any money coming. Now, I had kept a record myself of everything that we got from that man that year. Well, when he said that, I reached for my book and daddy stepped from my foot because he knew them crackers would kill you if you dispute their words, you know. And the first thing that went through my mind was, how could this man take all our money? And my father had six other children down there, raggedy, no money, winter was coming, and he gonna take it all.
Man Pointer, Tuskegee, Alabama. My grandfather was just as free of a white man he was a rattlesnake because he'd been beaten and knocked about, you know, so much. He just, no matter what you say or do, let them have their way. Don't you say nothing back to them, no matter what they did.
Some white man might feel that I don't like the way that Negro looks at my wife or that white woman, and string him up to a tree, and when they got ready to lynch him, they'd have a picnic. They had told the people, we're going to have a lynching, and hundreds of people would come. The wives would bring a picnic basket and bring her little children, and they would have the lynching.
I'm Leon Litwack. I'm a professor of history at the University of California at Berkeley. In terms of the era of Jim Crow, what blacks did essentially was to draw inward, to construct in their own communities a separate world. Blacks understood that to survive was to watch every word, every action in the presence of whites.
My mother told me nobody ever knows what goes through your head. She and she used to say, that lady that I work for is foolish enough to believe that I really like her. She said, I'm not thinking about her one way or the other. Just pay me what she owes me. And I learned, too, that I could smile on the outside.
I'm Darlene Clark Hine, and I teach African American history. World War II looms as perhaps the most important moment in the 20th century in the whole struggle bringing down Jim Crow.
I went to the train station, got on the train, and the conductor walked back where I was and told me, boy, you can't sit there. Get the hell on to the rear, you know. Yeah, I've been in combat, you know, and yeah, this guy gonna mistreat me like that.
If they could die for freedom abroad, they could die for freedom at home. And when they came home, hundreds of thousands of black men and women were determined that Jim Crow's days were numbered.
We decided after the war was over that we would fight for civil rights and for the right to vote.
Got tired of being kicked around. We just got tired of it. That was the last thing that happened. They hung a black man out of the courthouse window. And the word started getting around. We're tired now. We'd rather die than to take it.
The civil rights movement to African Americans in the South was a constant movement. I often think that the reason we date the civil rights movement to the mid-50s is that's when we had television, and that's when white people in other areas began to see, oh, these people are fighting for their rights. Older black man in, I believe, Louisiana was being interviewed by an avid young historian, and the historian said, so, where were you when the civil rights movement came? And the old black man said, well, I've been in the civil rights movement all my life.
I'm Della D. Sellins. There was an eating place downtown on the square. It was a seafood place. And that was a place that we waited for the buses. I used to stand there and look, and I'd say to myself, why can't I eat there? And I said, I'm going to eat there someday. When desegregation took place in Charlotte, I got dressed, and my mother said, where are you going? I said, I'm going downtown. She said, where? I said, I'm going to eat down there. So I went, and I walked in there, and I ate. Food was no better than it was anywhere else, but I ate.
Stories from Remembering Jim Crow. Tomorrow, whites remember Jim Crow.
Their way of life, I think they were happier than the white people because nothing worried them, you know, nothing bothered them.
You can hear more stories about Jim Crow and tell your own on the website npr.org.